Hello, friends, and welcome to the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting today from the studios of KKNW here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle on 1150 AM. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place, and I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a better place. I want to let everyone know I'll be going back to Mount Shasta twice this year, from July 1st to the 8th, and again from August 27th to September 3rd. We always see lots of Sasquatch and many UFOs flying around the mountain, and we always meet Adama and the people of Telos in the hollow earth. We also experience many miracle healings. Last September, my eyesight was restored to perfect crystal clear 2010 eyesight in September after Adama and the people of Telos gave me a miracle healing. Other people have been healed of Lyme's disease and Lou Gehrig's disease, and one lady was even given a new pair of legs so she wouldn't need a crutches or a wheelchair again in 2017. The cost is just $200, and if you'd like to go, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I have Richard Serrett, a wonderful radio show host and from Toronto, Canada, on the line now, but I wanted to first give just a few minutes to Agnes Delat. She's from a beautiful little place just outside Victoria, British Columbia, and she has something called Soul Comfort Sheepskin. Agnes, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, good. Agnes, tell my listeners, what's so special about sheepskin and why is it good for you?
Well, first of all, the skin is the largest organ of the body, and the skin needs to breathe. And wool allows the skin to do that. Mm-hmm. And that simply gives you optimum health, nevertheless supports it greatly. So, for example, let's just address wool bedding. Wool has a body heat of its own, and it'll keep all your muscles nice and soft all night long. As a result, not so stiff in the morning. Studies also show that the body loses 2 ounces of vapor moisture an hour, a liter a night. And if you're in synthetics, and as most mattresses are synthetics, then we're just lying in that moisture all night long, which, of course, in the morning, your aches and pains, and if you've had operations or injuries, you're going to feel them. And the other thing, so wool absorbs 30 to 40% its own weight in moisture. And what do the professionals say? If you're in a dryness and a warmth, you know, the body feels the best. And wool is also a natural insulation. So wool will do all the work to keep you at 98.6, 37 Celsius all night long. And you, as a result, can use your energy to regenerate, which is what sleep was really intended to be. And most bedding that is synthetic, of course, you sweat all night and blankets on, off all night long, and you have that restless sleep. Well, if you're in wool, studies even show that your heart rate lowers and you have this profound, deep sleep. Mm-hmm. And in the morning, you're rested and ready for your day.
Oh, that sounds great. Now, real quick, you told me about a gentleman who was in a nursing home. He had sores in it from sitting in bed too much. And I think that's maybe a common problem in it can be in nursing homes or in the hospitals. What good effect does sheepskin have on that? Does that help situations like that?
You know what, Ted? Wool is, well, first of all, Mother Nature has everything for us, if only we knew what to use, when to use, how to use. So, wool is one of the only fibers that will prevent bed sores from developing. For example, on home care hospital beds, you have plastic on the mattresses and most often polyester cotton sheets. Right. So these folks are, needless to say, lying in that moisture. And the reason that's such an issue is because the bad bacteria thrive in a moisture. Wool will absorb that moisture, wick it away from the skin, and hold it in that hollow fiber. Mm-hmm. And also, for people that are, you know, in bed full time or wheelchairs, wool is a coil. It's recognized as pressure redistribution in the medical field. And believe it or not, there's between 3,000 and 5,000 strands of wool in a square inch.
Oh, like that's amazing.
isn't Mother Nature just absolutely phenomenal?
Oh.
And then
absolutely.
The other reason why people come down with bed sores is the chafing to the skin. And often, you know, by the time, you know, we're at that age bracket, the skin is very thin. So
sure.
As a result, the little wool fibers fold in upon themselves. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's no abrasion to the skin. So for people that are bedridden, wool is absolutely the answer. And on
Sounds
that
great.
Note, diabetics, it's huge also, especially in their
footwear. Let me give people your website. It's www.soulcomfortsheepskin. It's S-O-U-L, comfortsheepskin.com. And your toll-free number is 1-800-404-0622. Again, that's 1-800-404-0622. And I have to get to my next guest now, Angus, but I'll have you on again. And I want to thank you so much for your sharing your words of wisdom and your wonderful products here on the air.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, my friend. You take care. Have a beautiful day.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks so much. Now I'd like to introduce my next guest, Richard Syrett from Toronto, Canada. He has a television program that was called Conspiracy Show. He also has a radio show, wonderful radio show out of Toronto that's on Zoomer Radio. It broadcasts on Sunday nights from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 740 a.m. in Toronto. And Richard, how are you doing there?
Hey, Ted, I'm terrific. Thank you. A quick correction. It's my fault on the website. I just corrected it today. The uh-huh. Sunday night show on Zoomer Radio is 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. It's a late night show. So 11, that's my fault. I just corrected that. 11 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Well, you know, my friend Albert Einstein always said that God doesn't play with dice. So there was a reason why I said that, so you would correct it and people wouldn't be dialing in 12 hours earlier to listen to you.
Well, thank you for that, Ted. Thank you.
Sure. And for people outside of Toronto, you can go. I hope I have this right. His website is www.talkzone.com. Is that the right website?
That's one place they can find previous shows. That's my syndicator's website. They can go to my website as well, strangeplanet.ca, and there's a list of affiliates there.
Okay.
And they can also stream the show on zoomerradio.ca. That's the problem with the technology. There's so many different ways to listen. I could sit here for half an hour and tell you all the different ways, but they can go to zoomerradio.ca if they're outside of Toronto and they can't find an affiliate near them.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. I have to ask you, the title of your webpage begs the next question. Do you think we have a strange planet, Richard?
To say the least. Not only is reality stranger than we imagine, it's stranger than we can imagine.
Sure. Right. No, I agree with you totally. Well, I've listened to you before on Coast to Coast. You also do part-time broadcasts on Coast to Coast. I think you'll be I can't remember. You had your schedule. I should bring it up when you'll be on Coast to Coast again.
Sunday, May 31st. May 31st is the next one. Typically, I do about 3 shows a month on Coast.
Okay. Great. Well, I urge everyone to listen to Richard. He's a great guy and has a lot of interesting insights. We've got more than 45 minutes. Richard, and where would you like to start with today's show? I mean, there's lots of questions I could ask you, but just curious, see where you'd like to lead us first.
Well, I look at what's happening today and the quarantine and the coronavirus pandemic as kind of where the rubber meets the road for shows like mine and maybe yours, those mm-hmm. that deal in conspiracies. And I should say from the outset, I'm not a conspiracy theorist in air quotes. I mean, I talk to people who are, and I interview conspiracy theorists, although I think, you know, many of them have some credence, not all, but some. But when it comes to what's happening right now, I think you'd have to sort of do backflips and be a bit of a contortionist not to understand that there is more going on here than meets the eye.
Sure.
That this isn't simply, having a shelter in place for such an extended period of time, to me anyway, is no longer about health. It's about control. Initially, they, public health officials and politicians, said that if we sheltered in place and sort of cowered in our homes for a couple of weeks until we could flatten the curve. Do you remember that term? We're going to flatten the curve.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were afraid that there would be that we would overwhelm the healthcare system with, you know, sick people showing up with coronavirus, and they wouldn't have enough ICU beds, and they wouldn't have enough ventilators. Sure. Well, have you noticed, Ted, how flatten the curve then very surreptitiously became, we need to shelter in place until we come up with a vaccine.
Right, right. That's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did they get that one past us?
Well, I and also it's funny, but what's happened here, Richard, is that there's been a shutdown order, but only big box stores like Walmart, for example, have been allowed to open, which bring in thousands of people every week. But the little tiny little businesses, mom and pop businesses that people have had maybe for decades or their whole lives, those have been shut down. And people have had a hard time understanding why the difference, frankly. But
that's an excellent point. There seems to be no rhyme or reason. They've done the same thing up here. Mm-hmm. So they opened the big box stores. So Walmart, yes, but Home Hardware, no. And here's the other interesting thing is, of course, in the States, you have an election coming up in November, and they're talking about, you won't be able to vote in person. You'll have to mail in a ballot, which, of course, is just rife for election fraud. So that's here's an idea. Why don't you move your ballot boxes into Walmart?
Well, that's true. That's true. They could probably do it pretty efficiently. So, yeah, they could probably do it pretty efficiently. I'm concerned about the overstepping, you know, about the civil liberties aspect of everything. And that many governments are trying to hold on to this tight control even after the virus goes away.
Well, that's what bureaucracies do. They grow. I liken them to like synthetic beasts. They're this sort of this artificial organism, and their motivation or their raison d'etre is to expand. And that's also part of human nature. Once you get a little bit of power, you want more. And so that's what government agencies tend to do. Mm-hmm. They want to increase their power and their purview, and they need more resources, they need more money, they need more tax revenue, and this is what government does. So government as a collective, obviously made up of individuals, but government seizes upon something like this. And I'm not saying government caused COVID-19. I mean, that's another discussion, you know, the origin of it. But, that old expression, you never let a crisis go to waste.
Right.
And that was Machiavelli who said that. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what's happening now. So you have this crisis, either real or imagined, and you have all of these almost countless and competing groups, organizations, government agencies, shadowy figures, all seizing upon this crisis and using it to their advantage, and whatever that motivation or whatever their end game is. So, if it's a pharmaceutical company, they're going to seize upon this opportunity because they could make a boatload of money with antiviral medication or vaccines.
If you're
someone who is opposed to globalism. So, for example, you're a big, and I would count myself as an anti-globalist. I believe in the sanctity of the nation state. People like me might look at this crisis as an opportunity to rearrange supply chains and bring businesses home from China and create jobs in the United States or Canada. Mm-hmm. So everybody has an agenda when there's a crisis like this, the black hats and the white hats and the gray hats in between.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where do you think this is all going to end within the next year or two, if you had a crystal ball?
Well, I've talked to a number of infectious disease specialists and immunologists and disease modelers. And, you know, for every Anthony Fauci out there who's saying the sky is falling and you know, we have to stay locked down, there is someone who with the same credentials as Anthony Fauci or greater that says the opposite. Right. So there's such dissonance and such white noise. It's difficult to even peer into the crystal ball. I suspect that this thing is going to peter out, much the way that SARS did, which was also a coronavirus. This is COVID-19 is also kind of a SARS too. So right. I think it could peter out. It may come back. Sort of regionally, you might have some hot spots. Just for example, I'm just pulling these states out of a hat. Maybe there'll be a hot spot in Colorado in the fall, and maybe another little one in, I don't know, Burlington, Vermont. Right. But hopefully, you know, they're not going to do a uniform lockdown the way they did this time, because it is shaping up to be, I believe, one of the greatest mistakes in history. They have thrown the world into a global depression, you know, it's like after a hurricane, you can come out of your house and survey the damage. That's what's going to happen when we finally come out of our homes, and we're going to see and realize the damage that was wrought by this lockdown is going to demonstrate to us the cure was far, far worse than the disease.
I'm friends with Paul Hellyer, the former defense minister, and he called me up about 3 weeks ago, and he said, "Ted, I'm hearing all this crazy stuff happening in the States. What's it like down there?" And so we talked for a while, and he said up in Canada, Richard, you probably heard this. He said like 70% of restaurants will be – he had the statistic from a study that 70% of restaurants across Canada would likely face bankruptcy after this is all said and done.
And not just restaurants. I mean, I don't have a figure or a number, but yeah, I think, you know, the millions of lives that have been destroyed by this, and it's all based, as far as I can see, and researching and interviewing, you know, dozens and dozens of people in this regard, it's all based on bad data, faulty models, and it's a great human tragedy, and I don't know how long it's going to be for us to recover, but we are on the brink of a worldwide depression, and if the United States goes down, you know, we are sunk.
Well, statistically, I had Robert F. Kennedy on my show about 3 weeks ago, and he was saying that every tenth of a point rise, Richard, in unemployment in this country results in 4,000 additional deaths. A lot of that's from suicide, from the stress of being locked down all the time. And I know I talked to a high school counselor here recently, and she was telling me that out a little town called Aberdeen, Washington, out on the coast here, on the coast of the Pacific, that the suicide rate among high school students had increased to something like getting close to two a week. Can you believe that? Just from being locked down. And you go across the board, I mean, it's had a devastating effect. Never mind the virus. We're talking, and Robert F. Kennedy said on my show 3 weeks ago, he said that if you look at if you use government statistics from the CDC itself, it comes out to about 1.1 million Americans who will die from the shutdown itself. And if the best case scenario or the worst case scenario with the virus, maybe 200,000 or less. And I think the figures are far less, maybe 57,000. So he said on my show that we would have an additional something like million plus people who would die as a result of the shutdown, not the virus, but the shutdown itself.
That makes sense, and I don't know if included in those figures, that dire figure, horrible number, whether they're also including sort of collateral damage, and that is people who, because they have canceled medical screenings and other surgeries, or people just afraid to go to the hospital because and they have a heart condition. The people that are dying in their homes, and you're right in terms of the worst case scenario, 200,000. I agree. That number has been padded. We'll never know the true number. They have moved so many people over from, 162,000 people die in the United States every year from lower respiratory disease. Mm-hmm. How many of those have been moved from the lower respiratory disease column into the COVID-19 column? By what order of magnitude has the number of deaths, been exaggerated? So if we go back to April, Dr. Birx, who is on the White House Coronavirus Task Force, she told us all we need to know. She said in April, we are reporting fatalities from COVID-19 in a very, very liberal way. In other words, she said, if you die with COVID, we're going to list that as dying from COVID.
I see.
So the numbers have been padded, and also the number of cases, it's been incentivized, or there's an incentive, because if you go into a hospital for a normal hospital visit or a non-COVID portion, Medicare pays the hospital $4,000. If you go in as a COVID-19 patient, the hospital receives $13,000 from Medicare. If you're placed on a ventilator, that's $39,000. So we cannot trust the data.
Right. There have been some nurses coming public here, actually, saying the same thing. And one nurse was an eyewitness to a Seattle area hospital doing exactly that. A guy died of a heart attack, but he hadn't had the coronavirus, and he was listed as corona, so the hospital would get their $39,000. So. It's happening. Unfortunately, that's true. It is happening.
So we have to ask ourselves, so this is no longer about protecting our health.
Right.
Because, the idea of quarantine, if you want to build up herd immunity and we don't have a vaccine, how do you build up a herd immunity? You have to have young, healthy people get out there and get exposed to it so that they have the antibodies. But if they're going to keep us locked down, we're as long as there is one case of COVID-19 somewhere in the world, as soon as we emerge from our little groundhog holes, we're going to be exposed again. And here we are in our homes, washing our hands 50 times a day, walking around everywhere we go with rubber gloves and masks. Mm-hmm. Our immune systems are just taking a beating. Never mind COVID-19, people are going to go out there and they're going to be so susceptible to every other virus and flu, which is going to come around in the fall. It's a bad plan from the get-go. And again, I don't think it's about health. It's about control. They want us to be dependent on government.
Right. Well, I think you're right. I think you're right, Richard. And, it brings up a lot of issues that you just stop and think about what's really going on. I'll give you another example that people may not be aware of. The new updates to your iPhone, I can't remember the numbers now, but in the disclaimer for the new updates, it says that it's specifically designed, the update's specifically designed for coronavirus track and trace programs. So people, they can track you on your phone. I'm not making this stuff up. That's what the inset said, so. I haven't updated my iPhone as a result.
Right. Well, I've always suspected that I'm pretty sure they probably could triangulate us now even without that app. But yeah, as if we needed further evidence. The authorities, those that crave control and power and an authoritarian state, and these people, even our own prime minister has expressed that he admires the Chinese system. Imagine that, communist China. I'm not talking about the Chinese people. Wonderful culture, wonderful people. I'm talking about the regime.
Right.
Why do we elevate them this way? They are no better than Nazi Germany. They've killed more people. than the Germans. They have concentration camps. They harvest organs from political prisoners. They are one of the most vile and odious regimes in history. And yet, you know, they control the World Health Organization, who inform all of our public health officials. They get their marching orders essentially then from the Communist Chinese Party.
I think a lot of these
I mentioned our prime minister. We called him the boy king. He's the his only credentials was to get in was he was a part-time drama teacher in high school, and that's no offense to high school drama teachers, that's fine, but that hardly qualifies him to be prime minister. But his father was prime minister. But he's expressed his admiration for the Chinese communist regime, and that's what they look at communist China as the blueprint for how they would like to see the rest of the world ruled and surveilled.
I saw a post on the internet yesterday that the People's Liberation Army in China now is using mind control techniques, electronic mind control techniques, to control their military, and commanders can read the minds of their young soldiers. And if they think thoughts that they don't like, they can either send them home or send them to re-education camps. I personally wouldn't want to live in a country like that myself. But yeah, you're right. China has a terrible human rights record. Well, do you think there's an issue of your prime minister instituting similar measures in Canada?
Well, we don't have the types of freedoms in Canada that you enjoy in the United States, and I know that may come as a surprise or a shock to many of your listeners who look to your neighbor to the north, the Great White North, as this beacon of freedom and liberty and so forth. And it's not true. For example, freedom of the press. Our mainstream media up here is essentially bought and paid for by the Liberal government. They extended a huge, I think it was $600 million to the press. It was kind of looked at as a bailout or a, you know, an assistance package. But imagine you're a newspaper, an independent, journalistic organ, and all of a sudden the government gives you a big wad of cash. You don't think that's going to affect, you know, the way that you report on the news? And so every day the prime minister comes out of his home to conduct a press conference, and he takes pre-approved questions, and only from certain mainstream news organizations that ask him the most ridiculous lawball questions. So we really have no viable fourth estate up here. It's absolutely distressing and depressing. Really, to see what's happening here. There's nobody to challenge the government, and in fact, they're not sitting. Parliament is not sitting. There's no question period. There's no opportunity really for the opposition to challenge the government on the various questions of the day. So they are essentially ruling by decree. In fact, they just after a horrible shooting massacre in on our east coast recently in Nova Scotia.
Right.
The federal government, the Liberals, took advantage of that and instituted a massive gun control piece of gun control legislation by order in council. In other words, it wasn't voted on. They just did it by edict and decree. So that's what's going on up here. We're not enjoying the freedom and democracy that you have down there.
Well, I know I have friends in Vancouver, beautiful Vancouver, and They told me in April that Prime Minister Trudeau had asked the Parliament for complete dictatorial powers to determine all federal law across Canada, and that would go until 2022. And the opposition stood up to him, thank goodness, but they gave him complete authority over health matters till September of this year. I think that was a mistake, but anyway, that's what my friends in Vancouver tell me what happened.
Right. Yeah. Close. What they wanted was the ability to tax all taxation and spending measures without parliamentary approval. In other words, again, order in council. And you're right. They wanted that power until I think it was 2021. Okay. But still, yes, they didn't get away with it. But they tried, and they will try again. And we have a minority government, so if they could be defeated in a non-confidence vote if Parliament were sitting, but they're not. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's very, very tragic what's happening up here in terms of lack of freedom of the press. They also want to control all new websites, news websites, and require a license for.
Really?
Yes, they're trying to institute that. So we're certainly not communist China yet. But if they were left to their own devices and were not unchecked. And they are being left unchecked virtually because we don't, in the absence of a questioning independent media, they would certainly love to institute some of the controls and powers that we see in more authoritarian regimes around the world.
I have friends who have a nonprofit news channel up in Vancouver. It's a nonprofit station. And I guess you could consider them a news outlet. If this legislation passed, would they have to run their news stories by some sort of central government authority before they could even say anything on the air?
The idea is that any websites, you'd have to get a license. And if they are issuing licenses, then they could decline a license. Now, as yet, I'm not certain whether that would apply only to new websites or to existing websites, because theoretically – StrangePlanet.ca could also be considered a news site. And then I would have to apply for a license. And if they didn't like what I'm saying on the radio right now, they could refuse. Or if they deem my information to be fake news, then they might deny me that license. But it may only apply to new licenses. I haven't looked at the legislation closely enough.
Right.
But even if it's just new licenses, I find this kind of a power and control to be odious, to say the least.
Well, I think Richard, both you and I agree that people in the world just want to be free, and we know how to take care of our own lives. We don't need this heavy-handed, draconian police state overlaying with everything else. I mean, sure, the virus was bad, but I don't think it was as bad as they say it is or was. And I do see it going away, much like SARS went away years ago. Our bodies build up immunities, and then we'll be able to overcome it. And I think this thing is going to work itself out. But I think most people will stand up. I mean, like yourself, you have good common sense. And I'm sure that if you did a poll in the United States and Canada, we don't want to return to a police state. We don't need these heavy-handed state controls on us. We know how to take care of ourselves. And I'm sure that people will do that. I guess that's the optimistic view of it that I'd like to take.
Well, we have a different political culture up here. I mean, you have in the United States a far greater mistrust of authority, as well you should. Mm-hmm. In Canada, you know, we're all about peace, order, and good government. That's right in the Constitution. Here, so we don't have that skepticism of authority that we should have that. And an old comedian friend of mine was asked to outline the differences between Americans and Canadians, and it's kind of a dark bit of humor, but it's very apt. He said, when referring to Americans, "You shot your parents," and referring to Canadians, "We still send money home." So in other words, you know, referring to your parents as the royal family, King George, you got rid of them. And of course, we are still beholden to the crown. And what I also find rather depressing, I suppose, is that I think by and large, most Canadians would gladly trade their health or security for freedom. Mm. And that's what this whole thing is coming down to. Do you want to be safe or do you want to be free? And I believe that a free people are best suited to manage their own risks, as you alluded to earlier. Sure. As a free people, we should be able to decide, you know, what risks that we're willing to take. Now, I understand, you know, our rights end when it infringes on someone else's. So we have to mitigate that risk. We can't endanger other people. We can't have Typhoid Mary running around and infecting people.
Sure.
But there are measures, you know, if someone is sick, they have to be quarantined. But for young, healthy people, the 99.9% of, you know, people who will not die from coronavirus have to be allowed to manage their own risk, get back to work, and make a life for themselves.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a famous quote, I'm sure you know it, Richard, from Ben Franklin. It said that those who would trade liberty for security deserve neither.
And yes.
That was used recently by the Kristi Noem, of the governor of South Dakota, just last week, because her state, she'd locked down her state for a month, and then she said, it's hurting the economy and hurting my people of my state. So she opened up, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and she said that she's not going to close the state again. And there's about, I think, seven states that didn't close. I think that was Iowa, Nebraska, South Dakota, like three or four others. I can't remember them all off the top of my head. But there's other countries, too, that haven't closed down. Sweden hasn't closed down. Taiwan's been open. Mexico's been completely open. And for these countries, they have a very low virus rate, and everyone's healthy. They haven't had any problems. And that's because you built up this herd immunity like you were talking about.
Yeah, Sweden is an interesting model. Now, they have had a higher death rate than the other Nordic countries. Mm-hmm. However, as you were pointing out earlier, let's look at the collateral damage, the number of people in those Nordic countries that will die because at their own hand because of their despondent, because their businesses have been ruined.
Right.
I think Sweden has taken the correct approach. Taiwan is a little more difficult to assess because it's an island. Mm-hmm. And they did certainly, you know, they closed off a travel, you know, you can't fly into Taiwan. My apologies, I said Thailand. Mm-hmm. So Taiwan, has a bit more of an advantage because they are an island nation.
Right.
But Sweden is an interesting model. The states that have not closed down in the U.S. have not cratered their economy,
right.
Are doing, in some cases better than New York, New Jersey. Again, New York, people are crammed in there on the island.
Right.
So that's an extenuating circumstance as well. No question, though, New York State has entirely bungled their entire approach to this. The media is lauding Governor Cuomo, but he sent sick people into nursing homes and has caused the deaths or has played a role. I don't want to be unkind and cruel and overplay my hand here.
Sure.
I'm not going to say that he's got blood on his hand or he is a murderer, but he made a horrible, horrible error in judgment, which has led to the deaths of thousands of seniors in that state.
That's true.
So
that's true. The post I saw, and I haven't been able to independently verify it, was 5,000 people died as a result of that. I don't know. I'd have to look. I can look it up now to see if I've
got that number. Seems correct. Yes, that number seems right.
5,000 people, because he put six people with the coronavirus into nursing homes, and those poor people, those poor elderly people, all died because, well, you could say because of him, because of his actions. I don't know. It depends how you look at it. But Yeah, it's a very tragic situation, and yeah, I think it's good to look at this thing intelligently, I think a lot of people unfortunately, like Dr. Fauci, they have an alternative agenda that people don't realize that they have, and we need to step back and realize that this thing's going to go away, and like SARS did and other viruses, and we'll get through it. I know we will get through it. So,
well, public health officials, they're doing, in most cases, doing the best that they can. Here is the problem: they're horrible. We didn't elect them, and yet they have the full attention and the ear of those that we did elect, and that's fine, except that they're not economists. They're focused like a laser on public health, but there are other things to consider. There is the economy, which is inextricably linked to the health of the population.
That's true.
Because of the things that we've said earlier. So this idea of a politician deferring, and that's what I see happening, and this is the danger and the fatal error that has been made. Our political leaders are deferring to these public health officials who are deferring to the World Health Organization, who is that is heavily, heavily influenced by communist China, which may very well have started this whole thing either by accident or on purpose. We don't know.
That's true.
Made it happen or let it happen or looked the other way, and we're glad it happened. So when you go down the line, we're getting bad advice and bad data, and we're making bad judgments.
I agree with you 100%, Richard. That's I appreciate you so much for saying that, because that's the kind of common sense I think we need to steer our way through this. And I think shutting down the economy has been a mistake. And historians in the future will look at that as a mistake. Our unemployment rate nationally in the United States was 3.5% before this virus started back in January. Now it's something like 30-35%. I know in many communities here in Washington state, you drive down any main downtown, a lot of businesses are just boarded up. They're not coming back. And the little money that was sent out by the federal government, sorry, $1,200 is not going to bring a business back. Just not going to bring it back. So,
no. And I won't say irreparably damaged our economy, but if we don't open up very soon, like tomorrow, who knows? We could be looking at another Great Depression. 10 years,
right,
10
right.
years, a lost generation, Ted.
Right. Well, I was listening to you on Coast to Coast here a couple weeks ago, Richard, and you made a very, very important point. You were saying that people who passed away in hospitals, for example, couldn't have their loved ones next to them to help them pass over to the next life.
Yes. Yes.
And another psychic of mine, Carolyn, in Olympia, Washington, she's a great psychic, and she was saying that she was picking up messages from so many people who've passed on in hospitals all by themselves, and they were angry because they couldn't have their relatives and loved ones or husbands or wives and best friends and family with them as they passed. And this is causing a whole bunch of spirits on the other side to be upset, and also tearing apart the family too, which I think is unnecessary, totally unnecessary.
This breaks my heart. And again, they're not necessarily dying alone. There are wonderful nurses and caregivers who are amazing, wonderful, loving, kind people. So
right.
They're not necessarily dying alone, but they're not able to say goodbye, and the bereaved are not able to be there for closure to say goodbye to their loved ones, and the elderly. That's tragic. But imagine a small child. Maybe they're in the final stages of life with cancer.
Sure.
And their mommy or daddy aren't there to hold
right.
their hand. That absolutely breaks my heart. And
right.
it's all so unnecessary.
Or if you're having a baby, and I got an email from somebody about this about a week ago. First newborn up in Edmonton. And the husband couldn't be with his wife when she had their firstborn. He was pretty
right.
upset at the hospital. They were both perfectly healthy. There was absolutely no medical reason for it. But because of these draconian regulations, he couldn't be with his wife when she had their child.
Yes, that's a memory that you can't buy and you'll never get back.
Right.
I mean, there was, you know, up until fairly recently, men weren't really invited or allowed, I guess, into the delivery room. That's a fairly new phenomenon, right. You know, that the man would be out playing golf and waiting out in the hall. But thankfully now we can participate, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do see this. I do see their controls on us falling apart. I do see this virus going away and things getting much better. I guess I'm just the eternal optimist, but I think it's important to give people hope for the future and make them aware of what's going on. But try to remember that we are powerful spiritual beings. We can create a much better and happier reality. And because if we get really depressed, we're giving them our power to have control over us, which is not a good thing. And to realize that that this will end soon, and I know we'll get back to back to normal, or a new normal, if you will. So,
right, that's an excellent point. We can't despair. There is, aside from the horrible tragedy, the death and the sickness, there are plenty of upsides. Reconnecting with family, reprioritizing. Just kind of slowing down and catching our breath and resetting, and, you know, enjoying long walks with family and so forth. So there's, for me personally, you know, because I work from home, we homeschool, we have for the last 4 years, there hasn't been a huge disruption in our lifestyle, like, aside from some extracurricular activities that have been suspended for the kids.
Sure.
Not being able to see my elderly mother, who's 95 and lives alone.
Right.
But I've made an effort to double up on, phone calls. So I speak to her two or three times a week now. Mm-hmm. And, so yes, there is upside, and I'd like to think that we come out of this, wiser and stronger, the lessons hopefully that people will take away is, maybe up here in Canada anyway, is we need to be far more skeptical about who's in charge and the data that they're supposedly using to base their decisions upon. I pray that we will come out of this a lot wiser and a lot more skeptical, certainly here in Canada.
Yeah. Well, I know things will get better. I know one positive thing about the shutdown, though, I have to mention, is that I saw a post on the internet here a couple of weeks ago that the air is cleanest in New Delhi in decades. Not since 1980 have people in New Delhi, India, been able to see the Himalayan mountains because of all the air pollution. But people aren't driving. There's not as many cars on the road, and the whole atmosphere is cleaned up. Another post I read too, Richard, you probably heard about it, is that dolphins have returned to the ocean waters around Venice, Italy, and they haven't probably seen them in 100 years. So it's amazing, really. But I think that has had a beneficial effect on the planet in terms of the environment, even though it's been tough.
Right. Well, I'm going to be a little bit of a devil's advocate here and say I kind of miss the smog, only because that's an indication of human activity.
Sure.
And people being industrious and getting back to work. Yes, I'm concerned about air pollution as well. But and it's good that that's one possible benefit, is that the Earth is getting a bit of a break. But I would much rather see people getting back to work. I would much rather see people in the factories producing goods, cars on the roads, taking people to their loved ones, taking people to work, and I hope that happens soon.
Yeah. I think it will. And I think people will start rising up. I know there's been protests here and in California every week now in Olympia, Washington. There's been thousands of people protesting down at the state capitol to open up the state. There are protests all over California, I know, happening. The Wisconsin Supreme Court just opened up Wisconsin a couple days ago. And ruled that the governor's shutdown orders there were invalid. And I remember seeing the picture of this fellow at a bar, and I guess the bars were all doing great business, selling beer and whatnot. Wisconsin's a big beer state. They were all partying.
I I think that's fantastic. And that's, again, one of the things I admire about the United States. I have such an emotional investment and attachment in America. My descendants, rather my ancestors, I'm a bit of a time traveler here. No, my ancestors came up from New Jersey to Canada in the, I believe, the 1840s. But I love the United States. And one of the things I love is the fact that you appreciate freedom so much, you're willing to fight for it above all else, and I'm really heartened by the way that people in the U.S. are pushing back in a lawful and respectful way, but they are pushing back, and I would like to see a lot more of that here in Canada.
Yeah, well, thank you, Richard. That's nice of you to say that. No, I love Canada. My grandmother was from Alberta. And it's a beautiful country. I have many friends up there as well. But I know better times are ahead. We just have to hang in there. I mean, especially the last century and this one, it seems like it's been a constant battle of good versus evil. And this is yet just another kind of drama. What did Shakespeare say? We're all actors upon a stage. Life's a drama, and we're all actors, but actors upon the stage. So we have yet another battle between good and bad, light and evil. But I know that the light's always stronger than the dark, and I know we're going to get through this. So you just have to remember that and be strong.
Amen, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tell us again when you'll be on Coast to Coast so people can listen to you and also listen to you on Zoomer Radio in Toronto, Richard.
So for Coast to Coast AM, I'll be sitting in the air chair on Sunday, May 31st.
Okay.
Typically, again, I host or guest host three times a month. If they go to strangeplanet.ca, that's my website where they can find information on my weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show.
Okay.
I also have a podcast, Conspiracy Unlimited. They can subscribe there. And I have a YouTube channel where I live stream my radio program, The Conspiracy Show, which airs Sunday nights, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern.
Okay, wonderful. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes left, Richard, and I want to give you the rest of the time to wrap up your wonderful interview today and also maybe give some support and encouragement for people how to get through this current stressful time for them.
Well, I happen to be a Bible-believing Christian, but I don't want to thump the Bible, you know.
Okay.
Whatever your faith is, you know, take this opportunity to cultivate that spiritual side. And as you were saying, you know, we are spiritual beings having right. a temporary physical experience. And so for me, I also believe that the light is stronger than the darkness. And for those of us who see a lot of prophecy playing out, Bible prophecy playing out in what's going on right now, I always, you know, try to remind people, you know, if you're familiar with the Bible, we know how this movie ends. The good guys win. So take heart.
Right.
Take heart, and also take this opportunity again to reconnect with your family. Also, not only to develop your spiritual strength, but also to get healthy. Work on your, you know, go for long walks, eat right, you know, build up your strength,
right.
Because you know there's going to be another pandemic as sure as Friday follows Thursday, so you know let's hunker down and be ready for the next one.
And know that there are good angels and God is helping us, certainly, and we have a very bright and beautiful future ahead of us, and we will get through this, absolutely. People have to have hope and think positive for the future. And I know we'll get through it. All my angel friends have given me the same message, Richard. So anyway, well, I want to thank you so much for coming on air today. It's been really a lot of fun to talk to you, Richard. And I've appreciated you sharing all your wisdom with all my listeners. Thank you,
Ted,
so much again.
Thank you for the opportunity. Great talking to you.
Okay, my friend. Thanks so much, Richard. Have a good day and keep up your good work.
All right. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye. Cheers. That was Richard Syrett coming to us live from Toronto, Canada. And I want everyone to know that times will get better for us, and be positive. And thank you again so much for listening today. Bye-bye, everyone. Would you know?